Fightful.com.
White supremacy and Negro subordination. Part 19. Chapter 20. Climatic and industrial adaptation. The surface of the Earth is naturally divided into zones or centres of existence. These great centres of creation have each their fauna and flora, their animal and vegetable life peculiar to themselves alone. Geographical writers use these terms and speak of the temperate, frigid, and torrid zones as mere designations of certain portions of the earth where the climate is widely varied. But this is very subordinate to the real differences that separate the great centres of organic life. All creatures, indeed all organic and living things, have their centres of existence, their local habitations, their places in the mighty programme of creation. They are all adapted to these great centres of life, their organic structure, their faculties, and the purposes they were designed to fulfil, all harmonising with their localities, the positions the Almighty has assigned to them. There are approximating forms of life, certain genera, among animals and plants, that may be said to belong to the same family or group, but which are found in different zones or centres of existence. But there is no such thing as the same species being found in more than one centre of creation. All the animals and plants of Europe are, therefore, different from those of America, as all the creatures that belong to the northern region of this continent are specifically different from those of the tropics. Each and every specific creation is different from every other specific existence and differs just as widely in the circumstances that surround it and to which it is adapted as it does in its own organic structure. If an animal, for example, it has a special structure with special instincts and qualities, and the external circumstances, the climate, the vegetation, all things are in perfect harmony. And this law may be said to be universal, for the few seeming exceptions scarcely deserve notice. There are a few plants and cereals suited to all climates. The potato of American origin is cultivated with equal success in Europe, while most of our ordinary vegetables are of European origin. Wheat grows with equal luxuriance in the valley of the Nile, the tablelands of Mexico, and the great Northwest. But while all of these things, and many more, are thus capable of successful cultivation in different localities from those in which they were originally created, the external conditions must be preserved. The same or similar soil, and to a certain extent the same climate or the same heat and moisture, are essential in their cultivation. This is also generally true of animals. Our domestic animals are all suited to different climates. The horse, dog, ox or sheep are of European origin, some of them Asiatic, and they live and multiply with equal certainty under the fervid suns of the tropics or amidst the icy blasts of the extreme north. They are striking exceptions, however, to the general law which adapts all creatures to their own centres of existence, and it would seem were designed by the Almighty and Beneficent Creator for the especial purpose of benefiting man. They have accompanied him in all his wanderings, especially the dog and horse, shared his fortunes, aided in fighting his battles, and however subordinate, played an important role in the civilization of mankind. They are closely associated in this capacity for resisting external circumstances with man himself, that is, the Caucasian or master man, who as regards mere climate is capable of living and of enjoying the healthy development of all his faculties in all climates alike, unless perhaps the polar regions or extreme north. As a general law, all creatures, as they ascend in the scale of being, become less and less subject to external influence. But some of our domestic animals are certainly exceptions, for the dog and horse, at all events, are capable of living where the Negro, and possibly the Mongol, would surely become extinct. The same general laws of climate affect the human races, not exactly similarly, of course, but approximately, as they do animals, and with a certain modification, as they do plants. That is, they have all centres of existence to which they are specifically adapted, with the sole exception of the Caucasian, as some of our domestic animals, and indeed some vegetable existences, are exceptions. The white man, as has been said, can exist everywhere, where life of any kind is possible, except the extreme north, and even here, as shown by Cain and other explorers in those bleak and barren regions, by proper precautions or by complying with certain conditions, life is possible for certain periods. He is, doubtless, designed for the temperate latitudes, industrially considered, but as regards climate, he is at home everywhere. Writers, ignorant of the laws of climate, and indeed ignorant of the specific character of races, have supposed that they become weak, effete, and imbecilic in tropical latitudes, and this notion is, perhaps, very generally entertained by otherwise intelligent people. The population found in these regions are Negro, Indian, or Malay, intermixed often with white blood, and these inferior peoples are supposed to be a result of climate, and to exhibit the natural consequences of a warm and enervating atmosphere. The white man, under the equator, living, or rather attempting to live, the life of the Negro, to labour under the rays of a vertical sun, would rapidly decline and die, for his organic structure could not resist the external influences that tend to destroy him. The malaria, springing from the decomposition of the rank vegetation, which ascends in the early portion and descends to the earth in the later portion of the day, would soon poison all the springs of life, and fever would close the scene. Any attempt at labour in midday would be still more rapidly fatal, for the caloric generated by the exertion, without an excretory system to relieve it, would end in fatal congestions of the vital organs, especially the brain. We constantly witness an approximation to this in our own western states and territories, where nearly a generation voluntarily sacrifice themselves in the effort of preparing comfortable homes for their offspring. But after a certain progress is made, the causes of disease subside, and the temperate climate enables them to labour at all times. But while the white man is forever forbidden by the laws of his physical nature to labour, or by his own hands to grow the natural products of the tropics, he can live there and enjoy all his faculties of mind and body with the same certainty and success that belong to the temperate latitudes. It may be that the temptations to indulgence, to voluptuousness, or to the gratification of the animal appetites are greater in these warm and glowing climes, but surely no more so than in our own summers, compared with the winter or other less attractive seasons. On the contrary, the necessities of cleanliness and the less potent demand for stimulants, with the cooling and delicious fruits of the tropics, tend to delicacy of tastes and appetites. At all events, it is certain that the grossest, most brutal, and most immoral populations of Europe are found in the far north, while those of southern Europe are the most temperate and the most delicate in their habitudes of any people in the world. But climate has little, if any, influence in these respects. The white man, under the same circumstances, is the same being, and his grossness and immorality, or his delicacy, temperance, and morality, are things of chance, according as he has been educated, and circumstances, public and private, have formed his character. As a master, as the guide and protector of the subordinate Negro, he may live wherever the latter can. Otherwise, the Negro would have been created in vain, a blank in the economy of the universe, a contradiction in the designs of providence, and a blotch on the fair form of creation. Generally speaking, climate or other external circumstances have influence over the life, either human or animal, according as they are low in the scale of being, and therefore, while the Caucasian man can live and enjoy the full development of all his powers in the tropics, the Negro and other inferior races are absolutely limited to their own centres of existence. The Mongols have been confined to those portions of Asia where they now exist ever since known history, for though in the mighty invasions of Genghis Khan, Tamerlane and others, when millions of them spread like a flood over other regions and even as far as Chalon in France, they almost as rapidly receded and are now just where history first found them. The modern slave trade, carried on so extensively by the English of our day, where these people, under various pretexts, are placed aboard ships and sent to Jamaica and other West Indian islands to supply the place of the abandoned Negro, must be a far greater wrong than the importation of Negroes from Africa, for it is a violation of the laws of climate that must rapidly destroy them. While in the case of the Negro, he is still within that centre of existence where God himself placed him. The Malay, too, is in his own centre of life, and like all the inferior races, never migrates from it. The Eskimo, buried in the bleak and desolate north, never ventures beyond it, and should he be carried into the tropics by the white man, would doubtless soon succumb under its burning suns. We know but little of the Indian or Aboriginal in these respects. They now constitute the industrial forces of Mexico and, except Brazil, of all South America. There are some 10 million of them, and as we know that the Negro can never labour on the tablelands or live at all in an atmosphere several thousand feet above the level of the sea, it may become a question of immense importance to the civilization of this continent to determine the natural position and our true relations to this race. The Negro, more distinctly perhaps than any other race, is limited to his centres of life. If Dr. Kane had taken any with him in his northwest explorations, it is hardly possible that they could have lived through it of pure Negro type. His organic structure, while as perfectly adapted to a tropical climate as the eye is to sight or any other organism to a given purpose of function, utterly forbids him to live beyond a certain latitude. An individual may do so, of course, or a generation or more may linger out a miserable existence, but his structure forbids that he should multiply himself or become a permanent resident in the extreme north. There are great numbers in Canada, the result of that widespread ignorance of his true nature that has worked out such tremendous evils to these poor people, as well as to the deluded and mistaken whites. Their situation in Canada is the most miserable, perhaps, that human beings can possibly endure. It would be miserable enough if they had masters, guides, protectors, and providers for their wants, but without these, with none of the external circumstances with which God surrounded them when he first called them into being, and then left to compete with white men for the means of subsistence, it is repeated that their condition must be most deplorable to which unhappy human creatures could be subjected. The constant accession to their numbers through the Underground Railroad renders anything like an estimate of the fatality among them quite out of the question, but when, in addition to their abnormal social condition, there is the pressure of an unnatural climate or of external influence, utterly opposite to those that God originally provided for them, and directly in conflict with their organic structure, then it is obvious, of course, that they must perish rapidly. all those physicians in the north who have had any experience of the diseases of these people know the tendencies to consumption, or disease of the respiratory organs, so common, almost universal among them, but few, if any, have known that this was a necessary result of the peculiar structure of the Negro. His entire surface is studded with innumerable sebaceous glands, which are the safety valves that nature has provided for relieving his system from the action of vertical suns. But these are rendered torpid, indeed incapable of performing their functions in the icy atmosphere of the north, congestion and disease of the lungs necessarily follows. Almost everyone has seen Negroes in northern cities who have lost their legs by frost at sea, a thing rarely witnessed among whites, and yet where a single Negro has been thus exposed, doubtless a thousand of the former have. Climate, therefore, has a fixed and absolute control over the existence of the Negro. God has adapted him, both in his physical and mental structure, to the tropics, and though he can live in the temperate latitudes, his welfare, his happiness, and the development of his faculties are secured just as he conforms to the designs of the Almighty, as written in his organism, and lives within the centre of existence where he was created. And those ignorant and terribly mistaken people who have seduced and led him into the bleak and forbidden north have unconsciously committed a crime that would appall them if they could truly comprehend it. Such are, briefly, the more prominent laws of climate and their influence on men and animals. That as climate itself, in the ordinary meaning of the word, has regard only to degrees of latitude or to modifications of heat and cold, they are of secondary importance, or at most are only a portion of those general laws of adaptation which govern animal existence and harmonize it with the locality in which it was originally created. Before the few exceptions referred to, all organic existence is adapted to its own centre of life and incapable of living in any other. This is illustrated every day and familiar to the least observing among us. Cereals and vegetables of every kind demand, if not always, a special climate, certainly a special soil. Corn and wheat require a soil suited to them. There must be a special adaptation of external circumstances, for there is an eternal relation between the organism and the circumstances that surround it. The most ignorant among our agriculturalists know from their own experience that certain things can only grow on certain soils, and this fixed and indestructible law, thus manifested in the simpler forms of being, pervades the whole organic world. And as remarked, it is in exceptional instances, or the instances where climate does not govern, that these adaptations to particular soils are essential. In general, it cannot be transplanted or removed from its own centre of existence. The products of the tropics, the sugarcane, coffee, indigo and cotton, the numerous fruits, etc., cannot be changed, or at all events, cannot be grown successfully outside of their original centre of creation. As we ascend in the scale, the laws of adaptation are, of course, multiplied or become more elaborate, and in the case of human beings, they are widely diversified with numerous secondary relations, but the great, universal, and all-dominating law that unites men to their centres of existence is as indestructible and everlasting as it is in the simplest form of vegetable existence. God has created both them and the external circumstances, has given them a specific structure and corresponding faculties, and he has made the earth, the soils, the form of its products, and its climate in perfect accord with the former. And as time and chance, or human forces, can never change or modify the works of the Almighty, this law of adaptation is everlasting. The white man, as a labourer, is adapted to the temperate latitudes, not because mere climate or heat and cold demand it, but because such is his natural adaptation. All the external circumstances accord with his nature, his physical structure, and his intellectual endowments. The soil, its natural products, the time and mode of their growth, their ripening or maturity, in short, their cultivation, is in perfect harmony with his faculties. The farmer of Ohio or Illinois, for example, ploughs and prepares his fields through the early summer for sowing them with wheat in the early autumn. The process is elaborate. The land must be manured, ploughed carefully at different times, harrowed over at intervals, and gradually made ready for the reception of the seed. Then he carefully selects that which his experience assures him is best. After it is sown, he again harrows over his fields, watches them carefully for several months, and then, the crop having ripened, another process begins. This is equally elaborate and demands the fullest exercise of his mental faculties as well as the labour of his body. He must watch and judge of the weather when he shall gather in his crops, how dispose of them. Then comes the threshing, the separation of the grain, the disposal of the straw, the feeding of his stock, all again needing the fullest exercise of all his highest faculties. Then, again, begins another process, if not personal, or where he himself is the leading party, where men like himself, or with the same faculties as himself, are associated with him, and engaged in completing the process which he began. That which he planted and gathered is now still more elaborately manipulated. The wheat is changed into flour by a lengthened and elaborate process, and then passing through another elaboration, it becomes bread, the sustenance of the race, the natural food of the millions, the legitimate result of a healthy exercise of his specific faculties and of the industrial adaptation of the race. Beginning with the selection of the land, its preparation, the selection of the seed, the planting, the care and estimate of the weather, the ripening, the gathering, the separation of the grain, the transformation into flour, the still greater change into bread in the entire process from the occupation of the land to the moment when placed on the table of his household, the tout ensemble needs and calls into action the highest faculties of reasoning and comparison. And however uneducated or ignorant the individual may seem when compared with the man of books, the process, or rather processes, would be impossible, of course, to any race except our own, or to beings with capacities inferior to those of the white man. It is the same with all the other products, common or indigenous to temperate latitudes. They all demand the highest capacities for their cultivation. The nature of the soils, the fitness of particular products to particular soils, the periods of growth, of ripening, the influences of the atmosphere, the action of heat and cold, the change of seasons, they are all in harmony with the elevated faculties, while the result, their cultivation and uses, are all essential to the welfare and happiness of the white man. The industrial adaptation is complete. The varying soils, often widely different on the same farm, the numerous regulations, the multiplied relations and connections involved, the changing seasons and complicated circumstances render the temperate latitudes as absolutely the centre of life to the white man, industrially considered, as the tropics are to the Negro, or as any of the simpler forms of being are to the localities in which we find them. The industrial and specific adaptation of the Negro to his own centre of life is, however, more palpable and demonstrable, for his limited intelligence and more direct relations to external circumstances enable us to grasp the facts involved more readily. The soil of the tropics has little variation and rarely needs any manure or preparation like those of the temperate latitudes. And the indigenous products, those that need care and labour for their cultivation, however luxuriant their growth, are few in number. There are almost innumerable species of fruits that grow spontaneously, and indeed a great number of plants that are nutritious, which need no care or labour, and which the Negro, in his isolated or barbarous state, lives on to a great extent. But the great natural products of the tropics, those that are essential to human welfare, which are at this instant the most important elements of modern commerce, and are vitally affecting the civilization of our times, are few in number, and need only the lowest grade of intelligence for their cultivation. Cotton, for example, needs but little beyond planting and picking, and sugar, so far as the labour is concerned, is even more simple. It is true, in the complete elaboration and final perfection of these products, the manufacture, etc., the highest order of intelligence is called into action. But this has no necessary connection with the Negro. Cotton is shipped to the North or Europe and passes altogether into other hands. And though the Negro labour was vital in their preliminary stages, it has no more connection with the ultimate disposition of this material than the labour of mules that were employed to prepare the earth for its original cultivation. Coffee, tobacco, and indigo are all equally simple, all in accord with the simple soils, the uniform atmosphere, the primitive laws of development, as they may be termed, and in perfect harmony with the grade of intelligence, the specific nature, and industrial adaptation of the Negro.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at Radio Aryan.